This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 24th, episode 1197, brought to us by you guys, the auditors. So thank you very much. Good morning, Horse World.
Morning. Today is Wednesday.
Hey, everyone. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day, baby. Here's to another week. Halfway done. The downhill stretch has finally begun.
Daddy, I want another pony.
What do they call Wednesday hump day anyhow? Innocuous jibber jabber.
It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday, and that means, yeah, you got a couple more days of work. But for some of us, it means something really, really good. Can I tell you something really exciting, Glenn? Glenn.
No, oh, sorry about that.
Apparently we can't.
You can tell me, yes.
Seriously? I just tell you I have something very exciting
and
to
I was
tell
on
you.
Mute.
And you, okay, you at least you weren't just typing. I heard Jennifer typing away over there. I'm like, what? Nobody's listening to me. Let's start over. Hey.
Hi, Jamie.
I've got something really exciting to tell you. Do
what
you
is that,
know
Jamie?
What it is?
We would love to hear about that.
Well, it might just be Wednesday for some, but for me, it means that I am officially a landowner. I and my dear husband just closed on 11 acres in Norman, Oklahoma.
Why? Why did you close on 11 acres in Norman, Oklahoma?
Because it's going to be the future flyover farms. When Chad gets out and retires from the Air Force, he plans on being an airline pilot, and he's going to travel around a lot and hopefully be stationed out of Dallas. And Chad's family all lives in Norman, Oklahoma. His parents, who I really like, and my sister-in-law with all her family, and my other brother-in-law, who's in L.A., they're going to move there. So it's going to be his whole entire family is going to live in that general area. So we bought 11 acres and hope to build a farm there someday.
Yay.
You guys really sound excited for me.
No, I am excited. So now does it have is it a farm or does it have anything on it?
Nope, it has nothing on it. Just really gorgeous 11 acres with trees and a little pond on rainy days and a little creek and beautiful grass and just all pasture basically was spotted with trees. And it's one of those. I went to visit it and I looked around. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can see it. You know, we looked at several 100 pieces of land and farms and properties, blah, blah, blah. And we realized that, you know, at the price range we were looking at, you can get a hell of a horse setup and a really crappy house or a really nice house with no setup for horses at all. And so we just decided to find the land and we found it really, you know, a couple years ahead of schedule. So it's going to sit there for a while. And we have a guy who's going to mow it for us for the next however many years. He's got a bush hog. He's gonna take care of it for us. And so anyway, we're really excited about it and thrilled that I basically, you guys, I'm going to have an adventure on my hands. I'm going to have to design an entire farm from zero. And, you know, me, like house schmouse, like whatever, just put it over in the corner. What are we going to do for the barn? What are we going to do for the fencing?
I'm like, what kind Chad's of like, fencing do you use and how do we put it in? It should be double fenced or single fenced.
What kind of fencing?
I
just wanted to mention, when you say Norman, Oklahoma, you know the first thing I think of, right?
I know, tornadoes. I know.
Because isn't Norman, like, known as the tornado capital of the world?
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never heard that.
You are going to get like one of those tornado shelters put in. The problem is you're going to have a tornado shelter that fits seven horses.
Don't you remember when they had the, we looked at a picture of one and it looked like an underground horse trailer where the slots were there. And I told Chad, I'm like, we're building one. I don't care. I'm going to whistle and all the horses are going to line up. I'm
all going to come running and line up.
Come running in the shelter, guys. Come on down. Yeah. Hay nets will be ready. Like, I've got it figured out. So yeah, no, it's not super exciting about the weather, but people that live there, it's not a big deal to them. And they're like, oh yeah, you just have a shelter. And I'm like, hey, what about the shelter for the horses? I mean, questions have been asked and will continue to be asked. But fortunately, this place is a little east of the alley, I should say. So we're not directly in the path of the typical moor through moor, you know, or the last several were. So
see, now when everything you've just talked about, the first thing I thought of is, wow, we're gonna have a lot to talk about on the show in the next couple of years.
Oh my gosh, I hope this show keeps going, because I'll entertain you for days. Like, this is gonna be great.
Building a barn and a house and all of that stuff. Now, are you going to go up and like pitch a tent and just bond with the land ahead of time?
You know, I have a horse trailer with living quarters. If I feel like I need to do that, I'll just drive. I don't really camp. I'm not going to camp.
Not even on your own property.
Be a house there someday. I'll sleep on the house. Is that what people do? Do they go camp on land and bond with it? Should I do that?
Yes, I think you should. I think you should take your tornado-proof tent and set it up there on the back 40and for a weekend and bond with the land. You have to get to know it.
I know. That's true. That's true. Okay.
Listen to the crickets, you know, the Oklahoma crickets or whatever they have in Oklahoma.
And if it gets too cold or too hot or starts to rain, I'll get in my car and drive the mile down the street to my in-laws.
I think the only thing I know about Oklahoma is that they have tornadoes. I don't think... Oklahoma's one of those states that when you live on either coast, it's one of those states you hear about in the weather reports. But other than that, I don't know much about Oklahoma. So I get to learn something too.
I can guarantee you that no part of my existence in my soul ever told me that I would live in Oklahoma, ever.
It's not a long way from an event, by the way.
No, there's a horse trial literally 2 miles away.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Yes, they have 2 a year. It's called Feather Creek.
You know, I don't. So, but one thing though is, I do not think they allow you to cross the border with your moving truck and your animals without you owning a Western saddle. I think you have to own a Western saddle and a cowboy hat when you move to Oklahoma. So you're going to have to make sure you have one of those, or they're not going to let you in.
I better do some shopping. I've got a couple years. Again, this is several years away, but we found it. And I said to Chad, you know, whether it works out or not, it's a great investment in a beautiful piece of land.
I'm very excited for you, because I know you guys were looking at what's next. So
yeah, trying to plan ahead and see where our future was going to be. And the good news is that, you know, I mean, honestly, living 2 miles away from my in-laws was not something I also ever planned for my future. But with having a big farm and having a husband who's an airline pilot who's gone a lot, my mother-in-law is only a mile and a half away. Hey, first of all, here, I need to do something. Here's the kid. Okay. My airline pilot husband has given me a plane ticket to Spain for a week. Here's the kid. Like, I mean, there's so many. Here's the kids. And he's going to have actually 6 cousins that are going to live around him. And, you know, here in Arizona,
you really have no family there at all.
None. Yeah. None. No family. So that's the life of the military. You know, you never live near your family. So it's kind of full circle. This is where Chad's dad, he was in the Air Force too, and his dad retired there, and his brother was in the Air Force, and now he's an FBI agent, and they're all going to kind of come together and get stationed together, finally stationed, move together, I guess. So it's really exciting for him and his family and for me to be a part of it, you know. Living with my family really wasn't a helpful option. So this is actually pretty helpful. And speaking of, this is the same mother-in-law we're flying out here in like 10 days to stay at my house with the kid while I go to Monty Roberts. So Monty Roberts Farm. So she's going to get a taste of it. She's going to get to know him.
I do have another question about Oklahoma. And I was trying to look this up while you were talking. Do they allow vegans? Because I don't think they do.
We've already tried to figure out what grocery stores are around. There's one Sprouts in Norman.
There's
going to
be five butcher shops within 2 miles and nothing else. Nothing that looks like a vegetable within 1,000.
No. There's one. My mother-in-law is like, there's a Sprouts. There is a Sprouts. I'm like, where's the Trader Joe's? There's not a Trader Joe's in Oklahoma, in the whole state. I'm like, what? Where do I grocery shop? Do I have to drive to Dallas to grocery shop?
Well, I'm excited for you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm thrilled. Chad and I were celebrating, and we can't be more excited about it. And the land is gorgeous. And you guys will hear more about it as we get to it.
I'm sure. No worries about that. Well, Jennifer, what is coming up on today's show? Besides, do we have any other exciting news?
On today's Crappulous Wednesday edition, we are joined by the Bug Doctor. That's Dr. Roger Moon. And we will have a discussion on how to get ahead of the creeping, crawling, biting, flying critters that make our horses miserable. And if that weren't enough, Dr. Mark Wooten from the Jekyll Center is going to stop by and introduce us to the latest and greatest diagnostic tool in the veterinarian's toolbox, the standing MRI. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate that. My daily winnie goes out to two people, actually, and it's a congratulations to both of them because there's just babies everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, babies, babies, babies popping up all over the place, and we're talking the two-legged and the four-legged kind. Well, Tammy Sarantz, all the listeners of this show know who Tammy is, and she just had a four-legged baby, a little red filly born yesterday, and she said that the baby and mom are both doing well, and it's cute as a dickens. So she was posting lots of pictures on, if you should go to Tammy Sarantz's Facebook page, you'll see lots of pictures of her little mounted shooter in the making. Congratulations.
And do you know what mare this was? Was this one of her mounted shooting mares? Or?
I do not know. I don't
know. Tammy, we need more information.
I don't know all the details on this one. And then also to Kat Nielsen, who has been on our show before and also has made monthly regular appearances. She does Eat Your Tart Out blog, and she had a two-legged baby by the name of Emma Gail Nielsen, and she had it a couple days ago, and it was a big one. And she said it was a natural delivery. I know she said she was going to try that. Natural delivery at 9 pounds, 10 ounces. So almost 10 pounds.
So why would you do that? I mean, why?
I knew you were going to have a comment on that.
Just why? There's no comment. I have questions. Why would you do that?
Well, congratulations. Very cute baby. And we're very excited for Kat and her husband. And she lives out there in one of those states, too, in the middle of nowhere. So you two could relate. She moved from Boston to, I think, the nearest grocery. Well, she said the nearest Walmart for her is like an hour and a half. And the nearest grocery store was like 45 minutes. So you two can talk. You have something to talk about.
I'm going to live near a town.
All right. Your turn.
Well, just to stick with your vein, I was going to give my daily winnie out to our listener, Ruby Kaufman, because she had babies. She had some turkey babies, and they're really cute. And I was looking at them, and I'm like, oh, she had turkey babies. And so I'm like, oh, I'll do that as my daily winnie because Glenn's got babies. And then I noticed she named all of them Thanksgiving.
Like, so they're all their names for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, like they're going to eat all of them at Thanksgiving. The perfect age, perfect size.
I don't know that they'd be the perfect age and size this year, would they?
It only takes like 6 months for them to be full grown. Yeah,
I didn't realize that.
So I redact my daily winnie.
You
to
don't
Ruby.
Get it, Ruby. Forget it, Ruby. You're not getting a daily winnie. Screw you and your turkeys.
Move on with your poor little Thanksgivings. Yeah, babies do. How cute. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. No. Redacted.
We always named our cows like, well, I remember the two were Chuck and Roast because Jennifer was afraid it was my first venture into animals. I had just moved on the farm and we got these two cows. And actually, they were repos too. The Humane Society took them off a farm that wasn't feeding them. And she said, we're going to eat these cows someday. We're not keeping those pets forever. We're going to eat them. And so we're calling them Chuck and Roast so that you'll always have in mind what's in store for these cows. Because she was afraid. And they were kind of cute when they were little. But I got to tell you, when cows get older, their cuteness level decreases. I'm just saying.
They were boy cows.
No, girl cows, I think.
You ate girl cows? Ugh, let's move
no,
on.
You're right. They were boy cows. No, you're right. They were boy cows. Chuck and
Well,
Rose.
You just have to cows. Neuter them, and then they're great pets.
Have you ever had a cow?
I have been around a lot of cows.
Do you like fencing? Do you like your fencing? Let me tell you what. You're not going to have it very long if you own a cow, just saying. So did you want to do a different Daily Winnie or
no,
we're just
I'm
doing that one
on.
And then redacting it?
I did it and then it's been redacted.
Well, if I could, I would play the song backwards. But I don't know how to do that. So I can't really
do it. How do you suck in
a Winnie? Hey, we did want to mention that as far as we know, we're going to have No Victoria from horseandcountry.tv today because she is the media person at Hickstead, which is one of their big shows over there, and she's actually in charge of the media, so she's kind of busy. And I know she misses every year for this particular show and then comes back and tells us about it. So we do not think that we're going to be having her today, but we have some fun stuff planned for you regardless.
Now, Glenn, you know, I remember you used to do your show on a ball, you know, like sitting on one of those big giant exercise balls.
Yes.
Do you still do that?
I do occasionally. My ball needs some air right now. So I got to, and I lost the little thing that goes on the air pump to fill it. So I need to do that because it's a little flat. I wouldn't be able to reach the mic.
I got a ball because my lower back from Jet always plagues me. And so I'm sitting on a ball. How do you keep your freaking dog off of it?
Well, like, see, our dog wouldn't, Glory would not go near the ball, and neither would the cat. The cat didn't want to have anything to do with the ball. And I was worried about the cat because he has claws. And I thought, well, the one day when we first got the ball, I bounced it near him, just, you know, bounced it like a basketball. Well, that was it. He didn't want to have anything to do with the ball.
Oh, my dog is totally ball obsessed. Like, if I bounce this ball, she would chase it for about the next 3 hours. However, the problem is she
hard
wants
to get her
to
mouth
sit.
Around it, though.
I know. She'd figure out. She'd just chase it. I mean, just play soccer with it, whatever. But the problem is, like, she wants to sit in my lap.
Oh.
I'm like, you can't. I'm getting bucked off of this thing because she wants to sit on it. So.
And I'm sure you also learned the hard way. I learned this the hard way. You cannot sit on your ball without shoes on, with just socks, because you can't get traction and you'll just fall right off your ball.
It's true, and you have to have long pants on.
Yes.
You stick to
the ball. That's true. There are all these rules for sitting on a ball at your desk.
Poor Dr. Moon is on hold right now going, what the hell are they talking about? Let's bring on our first guest, shall we? We've got Dr. Roger Moon with the Rutgers Equine Science Center, and he is a veterinary entomologist. Good morning, Dr. Moon.
Hey, Jamie. Hey, Glenn. How are you guys this morning?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show today to talk to us about bugs and controlling bites and ways to deal with insects. First of all, though, I got to know, what exactly made you want to get into the insect world with animals?
That's a good one. I started as a kid. I saw a little older kid plucking butterflies. I always liked to turn over rocks. At my grandfather's house, I smelled the breath of a cow. And then finally I found dung beetles. That's a long story, but it's the truth.
So you became obsessed with animals and bugs at that point through the marriage of all of that.
Yep. Study of entomology. Some people confuse this with etymologists. Etymologists are buggy about words.
Okay.
Entomologists. entomologists are wordy about bugs.
Oh my God! Could you write that down, please?
Bug jokes.
Is it too early in the morning for that?
I just needed like a top hat. Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah. You should see my cane and my cigarette holder.
Oh, wait a minute. I need to get this sound effect ready.
Ew!
Okay, I'm ready. We can go on with this conversation now.
Just terrible sound effect.
Are you all one right. of those that in their room when you were a little kid, you had like a collection of spiders and you had little pins? You'd stolen all your mom's little pins and you had them all pegged to boards and things.
Well, I didn't start that early, but I got to say, when I was in college, it's just a lark. I took an entomology course and the subject fascinated me and I had my collection and I managed to lure my wife to my side with it.
Ugh. What?
Yeah, how do you get a woman when your house is filled with dead spiders?
Collection.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so hot.
Jamie, you haven't got me started yet. Hey, I have a question for you, Jamie. Okay. I heard earlier you bought some land in Oklahoma.
Yes, sir.
My mother-in-law came from Oklahoma. They tell us that in Oklahoma, horses are attacked by cedar flies. Did your realtor tell you that?
No, but I bet you could tell me how to fix that.
Well, cedar flies are a little hard. There's basically three things that somebody who has horses can do to make their life more comfortable. One of them is to hide from the bugs. Some bugs won't go indoors. So if you leave a lean-to or something up, some deep shade that the horses can go into, they can avoid certain kinds of biters. So that's one thing, avoidance. A second is to prevent production. That is, know where your critters are coming from and then make the habitat unsuitable for them somehow. You muck out the stalls, for example, and if you compost your road apples, you'll prevent certain kinds of flies from developing there. And then the third thing is just to doctor them up with some kind of a repellent. It's a short-term remedy, but it's effective for a little while.
Well, then what
are insects, not others.
What are cedar flies and what makes them more difficult or scary than regular flies?
Okay, you really want the technical names here? They're a kind of horse fly. Appropriate for your show, but these are insects that are maybe an inch long, vicious biters.
Wow.
They're out for maybe 6 weeks to 2 months, and they're called cedar flies because their larvae, in immature forms, grow up in the soil under cedar trees, which there are lots of in Oklahoma. But, you know, if you go to different parts of the... No, you don't have to.
Okay, so I'm not... I was going to say I'm cutting down all the cedar trees. That's it. They're all gone.
Oh, no.
They right, sell so... cedar fly traps, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There's a world full of vendors out there trying to part you and your money. And traps.
I love this guy.
Honestly, traps kind of, create, if at the right time they can fill up with these things and you go, oh, my, I'm killing all these vicious insects. And it makes people feel good. But in reality, it's not clear that they're reducing the numbers of bites on their horses.
I always figured it just got them all together so they could mate.
Yeah.
It's like, I always figured it was like a condo, we're just going to get you all in here and gather you all up, and now you can just mate.
And have more babies.
Yeah, exactly. I just didn't know that made a lot of sense. Unless you're actually somehow killing them while they were in the trap, you're just getting them all together.
I think an important point. I used it in a fact sheet that we've written here. It's important to know your enemies, and a first thing for any horse people is to recognize that there are different kinds of flies. They come from different places. They do different things. And that little fact sheet, if you go to Extension Horse, you can find it under the pasture management or the horse care and management section. We've got good pictures of the main kinds that people are going to see from Canada to Mexico and even Australia and New Zealand. I understand you've got some listeners down there. Pictures are very useful. And from there, then you get a name and you can look up what it is and start to think about what might work to control it.
So let's review. Jamie has told us she's bought land in Oklahoma, which is tornado capital of the world. And now she's going to have 1-inch biting flies.
Yeah.
This is sounding great, isn't it, Jamie?
6 months or 6 weeks?
Six weeks, maybe.
Oh, phew, that sounds better. All right, well, no, I'll just have to have a fly sheet and on everybody, myself.
Well, now we had it gets really bad, just go indoors.
Hey, Doc, we had also in when we lived at the eastern shore of Massachusetts, we had some of the worst flies I've ever seen in my life. They were called greenheads.
Yep, and both they, relatives.
Yeah, and they actually had green heads, and they were, and they only came out for about 3 or 4 weeks in July, and that was it, and then you didn't see them anymore, but you could literally could not go outside. I mean, it was awful when the green heads were out.
Yep, I've been camping up in Banff and was driven off the lake by counterparts, same kinds. Those are horseflies.
Why are they only around for like 3 weeks a year?
How do they survive?
Well,
yeah,
that's a good one. They live, as I mentioned, larvae. These are the sort of grub-like things that burrow in the soil or live in water. Different species live in different places. Some of them we don't even know where they grow up. But it takes them over a year to complete their life cycle. And their ancestors were successful if they came out in a short time. You talked about mating, Glenn. Mm-hmm. It's an important thing for all organisms to do. And if they come out at the same time, then they can mate. And the bulk of almost all of the life cycle is you don't see the adult flies. You just see the immatures, the grubs, if you know where to look. But that's why they're out for just a short period of time. We have some insects that are out almost all the time. As long as it's warm, they'll be active. And you guys down in Arizona, you have a species that actually occurs throughout North America. It was introduced from Europe, called a stable fly. That insect is active whenever it's warmer than about 50 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 C, if you wish. And those go through multiple generations. So they're out all the time. Just different biologies.
That is... Yeah, that's what we have here, and they just seem to. I think there's like 3 days a year here in Arizona where we don't have flies. Then the horses don't have their fly mask on for 3 days a year. It's like glorious, but then you have to blanket them those 3 days. So there's always something. So talk to us a little bit about what you got, like the best kind of way to deal with insects for the normal horse person that's not living in Oklahoma.
Yeah. I kind of said it again. If you got to know who your insect problem is, there are different kinds that come from different places. So once you know who it is, what kind of bug is bothering your horse, then you can do a little bit of research and figure out whether hiding is an appropriate strategy or source reduction that is preventing them from developing. Or you have nothing better to do than repellents. Or actually, I guess the fourth thing is just to live with them. Recognize that they're part of nature. You've got horses out in the environment. We're compassionate. We want them to be comfortable. But, you know, maybe you can make that anxiety go away. Watch your horses. They'll deal with it. They're pretty resilient animals.
Well, we've posted the link to the page that you mentioned on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. But we're approaching in Arizona this time of year, and I know that a lot of listeners are dealing with it. We've talked about it repeatedly on the show, is mosquitoes. What is we can't just live with those, because my horses will just gallop. They just, if the mosquitoes are out, they just gallop. What is the best way to deal with that pesky, terrible creature that needs to somehow go away?
Jamie, you brought up an important question. First off, I think, to quote one of my veterinary colleagues here at the University of Minnesota, certain things are not negotiable for horse care, and one of them is it's not negotiable. You are responsible to protect your horses by vaccinating them against West Nile virus, Eastern equine encephalitis, Western equine encephalitis, and down to the South Venezuelan. Those four things can be controlled. That is, you can protect your horse from dying from those viruses, which they get from mosquitoes, if you vaccinate them. So that's not negotiable.
Okay.
You're talking about misery, though. We don't have any good thing that you can do to control mosquitoes for the most part. Mosquitoes come from puddles of water, not just buckets sitting around the farmstead, but all over. You know, there's thunderstorms come through and you get these wetlands. We relish wetlands in this country. We revere them. But people don't say they also produce tons of mosquitoes. And you're just up against insurmountable odds if you try to control them. The best thing you can do, I think, is if you can get your horse indoors, behind screens, that's hiding. That's that first strategy I was talking about. Repellents might be for a short time, but I don't know of anybody who's actually trying to repel mosquitoes on a large scale for outdoor pastured or paddock horses. I just don't think that's very practical.
I know down here in Florida, there's a lot of places where they spray for mosquitoes. And they go through the neighborhoods and they'll spray and things like that. And even do the, I think they even do some of the aerial stuff down here. And I remember that going, but way back to when we used to camp, they used to go through the campgrounds and spray. Now, is that killing, I don't know if mosquitoes have larvae. Is that killing the actual live mosquito or the thing that the mosquito comes out of? I don't know where mosquitoes come from.
Good question. The larvae do come from water. And the two ways that people control mosquitoes, well, three ways, avoidance, stay indoors behind screens, okay, that's the same idea, or they can go after the larvae in the water if they know where they're developing. They use products called larvicides. People may have heard of BT and things like that that work to kill mosquitoes as larvae. Or adulticides, which are fogs, usually small droplet insecticides that are intended to kill your adults. So what guy was driving through the park or gal was driving through the park with a fogger, she was probably spewing out an insecticide in small droplets at the right dose. Controls mosquitoes, probably doesn't hurt too much else, although we always have to worry about non-target effect when we use insecticides of any kind.
Then that brings me to the bees. What's your take on the bees that are disappearing in our environment?
My take is that insecticide dose matters, timing matters. With honeybees, they're out in the daylight, but not at night. And so a recommendation for people trying to control mosquitoes with adulticide, with those small droplet fogs, is to do it in the evening after the bees are safely in their hives. Other kinds of insecticides, though, create a residue that stays on the leaves and the flowers and such. And those can pose more of a hazard to bees and butterflies and all of the other the elements of nature that we are coming to revere. So the labels are crafted so that the applicator puts the stuff at the right place, at the safest place, the safest time. And I think as long as they adhere to those labels, and this goes for homeowners too, using any sort of insecticide, read the label, follow it religiously, and I think the hazards are pretty small.
And then is there any way we can get the people who make fly sprays to stop lying about the fact that they do not last 10 days? I don't care what it says on the bottle. You've got half a day.
Glenn, my response, and this is not just to line my pocket, is the country has non-partial research people at their land-grant universities that know how to test products. And at this point, it's difficult for us to find money to do anything. There isn't much money in product testing, but look to your extension people in your state to find what is known, what has been shown through research, and get, we think, a less biased perspective than if you just look at the ads and in trade magazines, TV shows, and such.
Am I the only one that is bothered by the fact that it says 10 days in the bottle?
I learned not to even trust bottles. I mean, pieces just for human food or any sort of claims made on anything. They all lie. Everything's a lie. This is all natural. Yeah, no, it's not. That's not natural.
Well, thank you so much. You've been a lot of fun. You got to come back and see us.
I love him. I want Dr. Moon back. You talk about
okay. This. Well, I'll come back if you call me Roger.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Roger it is. Roger it is.
There you go.
Roger, thank you so much for being on the show. We've got a link posted to your paper, and it's on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. What website should people go to be able to connect with you or if they have any questions?
Oh, look for me in the directory of the University of Minnesota. I've got a faculty page there. And you just Google for Roger Moon, Minnesota, you'll find me.
All right, Roger Moon, Minnesota. Love it. Thank you, Roger. We'll talk to you
great,
soon.
Great, Jamie. Glenn had a good time, too.
Hey, Roger, one quick last question. We're going to be talking about phobias later. What is the phobia of bugs?
Well, spiders would be arachnophobia. There's a couple of different flavors of insect fears, but I would call entomophobia is probably a mouthful. How about that one?
And I'll tell you what, you I'm impressed that you found a wife that was going to put up with a bug doctor. Because one of my first questions was going to be, are you single and have you ever gotten past the first date? And apparently you have. So good for her. Thank you, Roger.
Okay, had a good time. Bye now.
Okay, you got to admit, when you go in the guy's house the first time and you're seeing the collections there, what are you thinking?
Well, I Googled him, and he looks exactly like he sounds. What a sweet guy.
He's super nice. I mean, I wouldn't want to have him back. I mean, he made bugs fun.
Yeah, definitely. But I took notes. I'm like, okay, cedar flies, avoidance. I got to compost, find a repellent. But I'm like stressed out already.
Yes. Anybody, any doctor that could make bugs fun, he's okay in our book. Well, there's another thing that makes all of our shows fun, and that's our auditors. Let's hear from one of them now.
Hi, Fiona Crawford here, and I'm an official Horse Radio Network auditor. I'm a horse photographer based in the UK, and when I'm editing my images, I listen to the vast selection of great programs provided by the Horse Radio Network. Both informative and really entertaining, I think it's worth a few dollars or pounds of anyone's money. Just go to horseradionetwork.com and click on the banner. And for as little as a dollar a month, you too could become an official Horse Radio Network auditor.
Well, we want to thank Fiona and all of our listeners around the world for listening. And for those of you that are an auditor and are paying a dollar a month or more, some of you much more, we really do appreciate it. We appreciate you being part of the show. So we are going to be getting to our next guest, hopefully here soon. Jennifer is trying to reach him right now. He's also a veterinarian, so who knows? I mean, who knows what's going on when you try and get veterinarians on? It can be an issue at times. I got to tell you guys about this place in Australia. And it's this farm called Alice Springs, or it's a town called Alice Springs, and it's the Alice Springs Mounted Police Farm, where they keep the mounted police horses. And apparently an emu showed up with the one day in the field, and this kind of reminded me of a place Wendy used to live. This emu showed up in the field the one day and decided not to leave. Well, everybody knows what an emu looks like. It's a great big bird. And it decided that the horses were going to be its friends, and it apparently hangs around with the horses. It will not leave the paddock. When the horses gallop away, it gallops away. It hangs out and, you know, just is with the horses the whole time, has came and never left. So they have an emu. Now, where Wendy lived, they had a deer, a fawn, showed up in the field the one day, and it never left. Now, deer can jump. This deer never left. For years, as far as I know, the deer is still living in the pasture, and it just never left. It showed up, it stayed with the horses, and every time we drove by, there was a deer in this paddock, and it just never went away. So, yeah, so that is something that happens, and I would be interested to know if you guys have ever had a wild animal show up in your paddocks and stay and just never leave. So if you have, post it on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear about that. And Jennifer's still working on the guest here. Let me bring up one thing, too, that happened yesterday that I thought was sad, was that actor and also a big racing fan, Dick Van Patten died. I was going to say Dick Van Dyke, but he's still with us. Dick Van Patten passed away, so he is no longer with us. Of course, you'll remember him from Eight is Enough, and also one of Jamie's favorite movies, Spaceballs. I remember him from the movie Robin Hood, Men in Tights. So Robin Hood, Men in Tights was where you also saw Dick Van Patten. And I know that Spaceballs was one of your favorite movies, and Dick Van Patten was in that as well.
Yes, it's a sad day for comedy. But did you read the story in here about him and Mel Brooks?
No, huh?
Oh my gosh. So apparently Mel Brooks and Dick Van Patten would go to the track every Saturday and Sunday. And Mel went to the track with him and Dick Van Patten.
Okay. If you're going to go to the track, going with Mel Brooks would be kind of fun.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine how funny? So I guess it was one of Dick Van Patten's horses that they went to watch race, and he brought Mel Brooks out to watch. So I guess he says, this is his story. Mel came out and Patrick Valenzuela was riding my horse. So before the race, I introduced him to Patrick, and Mel said to him, if you win this race, I'll put you in my next movie. And Patrick Valenzuela wins the race, comes back to the winner's circle, sees Mel, and he shouts, I'm in the movie! And Mel Brooks put him in Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Oh, really?
He played the lead camel jockey.
That's funny. Isn't Robin that Hood great? Men in Tights. I came across that on TV the other day, and oh, that is a funny movie.
I don't know if I thought it was that funny, but I
like that movie.
Spaceballs wins it for me. And there's that new TV show, The Comedians, which has Billy Crystal and the voice, Josh Gad, who's Olaf and Frozen. And Mel Brooks plays has been on a couple episodes of it too, as himself. So it's pretty funny. I've liked that show. And Mel Brooks is just, he's just.
And
priceless.
I remember him. You probably don't remember Eight is Enough, but I actually watched that when it was originally on. So I remember from Eight is Enough way, way long ago. And I also remember him recently. He was in Hot in Cleveland, a show that Jennifer and I watched that just ended, actually, after a year.
Oh, did it end?
Yeah, Hot in Cleveland's ended now. It's a funny show.
Yeah.
I think an underrated show, Hot in Cleveland. But it that has now officially had its last episode.
Oh.
Well, let's go to our next guest. What do you think?
I think we should. Go for it.
It's time for the Horses in the Morning Horse Health Report, when our intrepid hosts, together with an unlucky member of the equine veterinary trade, attempt to inform, enlighten, or terrify horse owners everywhere into funding a Kickstarter campaign to mass-produce Kevlar-coated, bubble-wrap-lined equine products.
That's right, and it is that time of the day when we continue to talk about health, and in this case, we're talking with Dr. Mark Wooten of the Equine Performax, a veterinarian rehabilitation therapy services with the Jekyll Center, which is about 30 minutes south of Nashville, Tennessee. Good morning, Dr. Mark.
Good morning. How are you guys this morning?
Good. Sorry we kept you waiting through quality conversation about Spaceballs and other fine movies.
One of my favorites.
See, he's got good taste.
It's hilarious.
Well, today we're talking about the Hallmark Standing Equine MRI. Now, I think everybody, you know, is familiar with what an MRI is, and, you know, they know it's a tube that you go lay in when you're a human. How does an MRI like this work for a horse?
Well, the Hallmark MRI is a little different from what you're used to as a person or what other horse equine MRIs are, in that the horse is mildly sedated and he stands. It's strictly for the lower limb. We can't do heads or bodies or anything like that, or anything above the knee or hock. But the horse goes into the magnet standing, and whatever we're imaging on that part of the horse is directly between the two magnets, with a coil around the leg that picks up that creates the images. And so the big advantage is the horse does not have to have general anesthesia, which we think is a huge plus, much safer for the horse, lot less time consuming.
Yeah, I was just going to say it'd have to be much quicker for you guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And
the horse, like I say, they go in there and, pardon me?
But you don't have to sedate the horse and lay it down, right? So it's got to save you a lot of money.
Right. It's not under a general anesthesia. It's just a light sedation. And so a big factor, a big plus there. You know, I've had you never know when a horse might have a stormy recovery and injure themselves. Mm-hmm. And so just the fact that we don't have to have a recovery from general anesthesia is a huge plus in a lot of people's mind, and in my mind also.
What are we checking for? What kind of injuries? Are we looking at tendons, ligaments, that kind of stuff?
Exactly. You know, with the MRI, it's not just looking at bone like an X-ray. It's not just looking at soft tissues like what we typically do with ultrasound. It's where we can see all the structures in the limb, in the areas that we're imaging. Primarily, probably the biggest place that we're looking at is the foot. So much because we are limited to the amount of visualization of the soft tissue within the foot. And the MRI gives us all those images. It also shows some things that we're not going to see any other way. A lot of what we pick up with the MRI are bone bruises or bone contusions. There's edema in the bone, and it's quite painful. But you will not see that on X-ray or any other way of imaging. And it also is a huge factor in that those kind of injuries, they with time, they resolve quite well. So I think a huge part of what we're doing with MRIs is absolutely determining what's going on instead of the guesswork that we've done for years with X-rays and that sort of thing, and go through a constant phase of treat and hope and wait and see if what you're doing is going to work, as opposed with the MRI, we're able to image that area, see what's going on in there, and then really formulate a therapy plan, plus give the owner more of a prognosis of, you know, okay, what are our chances of returning this horse back to its previous level of competition, or are we looking at having to retire the horse and that sort of thing? So it's huge for that.
Now I'm looking at the picture here and of how this thing works. And it's not very big at all. So, you know, one of the things I think that the reason they did just wait it out is because they couldn't afford to do the larger MRIs like they used to be. So I assume this is more affordable for people so that they don't have to play the waiting game for 6 months.
Right. It varies as far as cost. I've seen all kinds of cost. And in some instances, some of the universities have priced the knockdown MRI probably a little cheaper than what we can do it. Of course, they have the backing of the state to support what they're doing. So there are some cases where it's less expensive. But once again, you're looking at general anesthesia. And putting the horse through that. So that is a big factor in our mind. Another thing that we are providing and promoting is we feel so confident in what we're doing with this equipment. And another big factor that I want to talk about a little bit later is if we can't determine what's going on with your horse, then we'll refund your money. The interpretations are not by me. They are done by Dr. Natasha Werpy. Dr. Werpy is a board-certified radiologist who is at the University of Florida, who reads, I can't tell you how many of these things she reads on a daily basis. And so she's extremely good at weeding through all the images and really coming up with an accurate diagnosis. We feel confident enough about that if we don't get a diagnosis for you, then we'll refund your money. Another big factor with the standing MRI is, you know, I think we've talked about this before. We've always felt that the diagnostic nerve blocks were very specific. Mm-hmm. If we blocked a very low heel block and the horse went sound, then it had to be in the heel. If we blocked just below the ankle, and then it had to be somewhere below the ankle. And with this equipment, we found those nerve blocks aren't nearly as specific as we once thought.
Really?
It has me pulling my hair out sometimes, and especially on horses that I can't put in the MRI. They just aren't responding to the therapy. We found several horses that they'll block with a heel block. We put them in the MRI looking where we would think that it should be found. And Dr. Werpy has called us up and said, whatever's causing this horse to be lame, it's not showing up in the foot. Go farther up the limb.
No kidding. The first time
she told me this, I go, no, it's in the foot. That's where it blocks. She said, no, trust me, go up the limb. We have found lesions as far proximal as the fetlock joint that blocked off 100% to a posterior digital nerve block, a heel block.
So how is that? That's like, I don't know, 50 years of medicine for we've been doing these nerve blocks in the back of horses' nerves, and you're telling all of a sudden, like, it might not be true? That's shocking.
Well, that's what we're finding. I mean, you know, those are not, that's not the rule. That's more the exception, but
right.
It can happen. And I can think back on a lot of cases that I sent off for, well, I shouldn't say a lot, a couple of cases that I sent off for MRI that, you know, we got a lot of stuff back on it, but it really didn't say this is your problem. This is where you need, this is what you need to be treating. And we never just seem to help those horses. And it makes me think, okay, was I really looking in the wrong place all this time? Maybe it was really more proximal and just my nerve blocks farther up the limb than what I would have thought. So it's really thrown a real monkey wrench in what we're doing. Not always. I don't want to say we shouldn't be blocking and blocks aren't useful, but we have to take them with a little bit of a grain of salt now as far as, okay, what do we have here? Because there are some cases that when you do the nerve block, how far proximal is the anesthetic itself actually migrating up the along the nerve, or is there a physiological numbing of the nerve farther up than what we would have suspected? So it's really kind of clouded the issue somewhat. But like I say, the good thing about this is, we, with the standing MRI, if the next day when we get the results back, if Dr. Nwerpe tells us, no, there's something farther up the leg, we can simply walk them back into the MRI unit, once again, lightly sedate them, and go farther up the limb, as opposed to putting them through another general anesthesia.
Oh, no, no kidding.
So we found that to be a huge plus. With the Hallmark MRI.
It's really incredible. Now, if for you, is it like a new toy? Are you like, you know, I mean, I would be tempted to say to myself, of course, this is as the horse owner, I can't really afford the MRI, but you can't figure it out. Is there some part of you that just goes, let me just stick them in there and see what happens? Let me just see.
Well, sure, I'd like to put them all in, but the manufacturers The Jekylls would probably frown upon me giving those all away, but no doubt, you know, we're to the point of, if it blocks off to their foot, there's so many structures in there that can be involved that, you know, sometimes we're just chasing our tail. And the Hallmark people did a really neat evaluation of, okay, if we go the typical route of block, localize, treat, without an image and have no diagnosis based on our imaging, then we can go round and round that circle numerous times and almost spend as spend as much as we would have just going ahead and going, okay, it's in the foot, let's put them in the MRI.
Yeah.
Now, I can see that as not being always the goal and always the way where you would jump for to first. And I can, you know, often I'll still, well, let's try this. But too many times I'm being frustrated with the results that I've gotten with that. Well, and I'm thinking, well, if we just put them in the MRI, we probably had more information and could have done a better job.
Another use that I've seen happen here, we have a lot of friends, you know, from the shows here that are professional riders and buying very expensive horses. And they're starting to do the standing MRIs on all their feet before they buy them as part of the physical.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. It is for a you know, a really high priced horse. It's becoming very commonplace for that
because you're going to find out about those things that, you know, for all this time they've been buying these $100,000, $200,000 horses, and they've had a minor something that they didn't know about, and it didn't manifest itself for a year or two. So now they're finding those situations. Boy, as a seller, you must be cringing.
yeah. You know, I can see that definitely working against the sellers, but as far as gathering information to make a more informed decision about purchasing a horse, it's light years ahead of what we're doing at this point.
Well, you know what they say about event horses? They say that the ones that pass the vet, we sell. The ones that don't pass the vet, we take to Rolex.
Yeah, very true. I can think of a lot of horses that could not pass the vet that were winning shows and that sort of thing. And that's why I say, well, we don't ride the X-rays, you know. you gotta evaluate each horse as an individual. So there's no doubt about that. And the more we do of these, the more we're learning, okay, you know, because we've gotten, well, first when digital radiographs came along, we started seeing images that were so clear and everything. We're seeing all kinds of things, and we had to reevaluate, okay, what does this really mean? And I think a lot of with the MRIs is okay, what do we see here? An interesting story, when I was with the folks at Hallmark for a meeting, they were the owner and the developer was telling us he used to work in the human field. And he told us how in England, all the soccer players were evaluated prior to with MRIs prior to their draft or however they do it with the soccer leagues in England. Uh-huh. And a lot of those teams, if they didn't see some little issues on the MRI with those things, they were a little worried about, well, how tough is this guy? If he gets a little... you know, a little injury or something,
in the corner,
overcome it.
Yes.
Yeah, as opposed to one of these guys that have all kinds of things going on, but they're still out there playing.
You don't want to see a football lineman without bruises.
Exactly. You don't want, if he gets a little bruised, is he gonna quit on us? You know, we don't want to see that.
Or but he's just not
they
hitting
really
hard
were,
enough.
They were, you know, interested in seeing guys that were able to do their job, but still, you know, had some issues going on. Nothing major, but at least something that you knew. That was probably not comfortable for him, but he was still out there playing and performing. So it kind of takes a little bit of what we think about when we're looking at a horse, you know. Well, is he doing his job, you know? And that's been really hard for me here recently. The horse was purchased here that had some issues, but man, what a nice horse, and he continues to do his job. And
well, and that's a decision that everybody
has to just kind of look over the things. And I think what Jennifer said is so true. Of okay, you know, those that don't pass the vet we sell, and those that don't go to Rolex. never truer words were said.
Well, Dr. Yeah. Mark, let's find out. It's the Jekyll Center. But there's a different website. It's Equine Performax, and that's M-A-X at the end there. EquinePerformax.com is where people can find out about it. And you guys are available. You're 30 minutes south of Nashville.
Correct.
And you are actually, you can be a live-in facility, which means the horses can stay there for a period of time and go through all. One of the cool things about your center is they get all the therapies if they're there, right? If they're
correct.
There for rehabilitation, they get whatever every day that they need.
That's right. That's right. We have two on-staff therapists that we go over and we make treatment plan, and they fill it and follow it. So I mean, the horse might be in the on the aquapacer in one day, might go from the aquapacer to the Colwar treadmill to the vibe plate to some sort of laser therapy or therapeutic ultrasound, a magna wave, those sort of things in one day. That if you were to do them on an individual basis would cost you
fortune,
several hundred dollars. Yeah. As opposed to $85 a day that covers all their therapy and their board.
So cool.
Well, yeah, and of course, so if you're anywhere in the South or the, you know, east of the Mississippi, then check out equineperformax.com. Thanks again, Dr. Mark, for stopping by. Now, before we let you go, I know that every once in a while you have big concerts down there at the Jekyll Center as well, and you get to meet all these fun, important people. Have you met Carrie Underwood yet?
Not yet. No, okay. I haven't met Carrie yet, but,
trying.
I keep looking out for her.
Okay. You tell her I said
actually,
hi.
Before,
all right.
I'll let you know,
go.
Glenn, as soon as I hear from her.
All right, good.
I was going to tell Dr. Mark I've got a lame horse in the back, and I'm going to email you some x-rays later today, okay?
Okay, you do that.
I need some help. Talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Dr. Mark.
All right, thanks so much.
Take
good
care.
Talking to you all.
All right,
bye.
Bye.
Thank
See, if you.
You
ask it, if you ask at the end, Glenn, he can't say no because we just hung up on him. Okay, talk to you later. I'll send you some email. Bye.
Veterinarians must really get sick of that. Everybody they meet is like, oh, I got to ask you about my horse. It's just like a family doctor's must at par- they just can't go to parties.
Oh, my poor sister-in-law is a geriatric doctor. Chad's grandparents are still alive. They're in their 90s. And she just sits on the phone all day with either the grandparent or the parent, the child of the it's nonstop. She has really, really had to jump in and be helpful. You know, if you're 96 years old, you got questions. Oh, my granddaughter, I'll just call her. You know, oh gosh, poor thing. She gets it all the time. So yeah, poor Dr. Mark. I'm serious though. I'm sending him some x-rays. His horse isn't getting any better.
If you could ship him over, but by the time he got there, you know, it'd be a long trip. So
yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, let's take a break for our song. We got some fun things to talk about here for the rest of the show, some lists and some other news stories as well. And we'll be back with those in just a minute. But first, let's hear from Jennifer. And then I have a song for you. This is from Templeton Thompson's husband, Sam Gay. It's a different song called Carny Clown. We'll be right back.
Jen here, host of the Horse Tip Daily Show on the Horse Radio Network. The way consumers interact with the brands they have trusted for years and those they are about to fall in love with for the first time is becoming more and more mobile, literally, and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future. Podcasts or internet radio shows like this one combine the new consumer preference for on-demand information and entertainment with the power of niche market audiences. Advertising on the Horse Radio Network podcasts allows you to reach the equestrian consumer using today's preferred on-demand delivery system. It's cost-effective and flexible, able to reinforce your existing marketing and social media strategies. To learn more about advertising on this show or any of the shows on the Horse Radio Network, contact us at 859-951-2022 or you can email us at glenn@horseradionetwork.com. That's Glenn with two N's at horseradionetwork.com. Come and join the Horse Radio Network family. You'll enjoy the ride.
I'm just a carny clown. I live for the roaring crowd. My stage is a grimy tent, which I share with elephants and lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. I joined at a tender age with dreams of seeing far off places. But now that I've been coast to coast, the thing I think I miss the most are friends who do not have tattoos. Oh my. Sometimes I wonder what a real life would be like. Two kids and a wife, and going home each night. And when the circus rolled round to our sleepy little town, we would join in the crowd and laugh at the carny clown. My best friend stands 3'4". His name is Ernest McLemore. He juggles fire and walks on stilts. Yeah, he lives bigger than he's built. He's petite, but larger than life. Oh my. Sometimes I wonder what a real life would be like. Two kids and a wife, and going home each night. And when the circus rolled round to our sleepy little town, we would join in the crowd and laugh at the carny clowns. I'm just a carny clown till the late show lights go down. Then I wipe off this grease paint grin and climb back on the train again and roll and roll and roll. Oh my, oh my, my, my.
That was Sam Gay with Carney Clown. And, of course, he is husband to Templeton Thompson, a name that everybody listens to this show certainly knows. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm Glenda Geek here with Jamie Jennings. Coach Jen is in the producer chair. And today we are brought to you by auditors just like you. And we're going to have another auditor roundtable coming out here in July, so you want to look for that, and where some of our auditors get together and just chat about all things horsey. Well, now you found, Jamie, an article on a new type of simulator coming out. Now, there's been some horse simulators before that have all been kind of a little bit clunky, and they haven't been, you know, like as good as the flight simulators that your husband practices on. But
yeah, well, yeah. This puts all those to shame. Go to racewood.com, and they have developed the ultimate horse. Dante Maximus is his name. He is the first of his kind to perform all three eventing disciplines, dressage, show jumping, and cross country, and also jockeys and Grand Prix dressage. This horse does everything. This is the kind of horse that if you actually had the real horse, you would never quit riding, because it'd be like, oh, tempi changes, and oh, let's go jump a big fence. Like, it does everything. So I guess what they're doing is I don't know how you could afford this. I mean, it's pretty incredible. So Dante has like sensitive areas on his sides, and he listens to your seat, and he has a bridle, and he listens to your hands. And so it's basically you ride this horse. And I don't know if to me, it looks like a fun video game, but I guess they actually collect information about what you're doing and how you're using your aids. And it comes back and it gives you a printout of how you could either improve or what you could do or what you did wrong. Apparently, the first step on the simulator is to sit at the halt while looking at the balance point on the screen to see if you're crooked, basically. Do you tilt left or right or forward or back? Gosh, I'd be busted on that one. And then, because I think I'm totally crooked. And then you learn how to walk, trot, canter, ask for the halt, and then you start to get like learn more stuff. And they have cross country jumping. They and you're galloping on this horse who's like galloping and galloping and galloping. And then a jump comes up and he literally jumps it. And you're looking at a computer screen in front of you of the jump coming up. And so you learn, I guess, how to find your distances and use your lower leg in place a little bit better and keep your body in control. So I don't know. It's really cool. I don't know what it's for. I would love to just get on it and play with it for like, I don't know, days. I don't know why they made this. Do you have any comment?
I'm looking at it right now, and they even have a polo pony one that is set up with artificial grass on each side, and there's a ball that's attached to the simulator. So when you hit the ball, it can tell how hard you hit it, what direction you hit it, and everything. And then the ball comes back, so you never, you know, you have to keep retrieving a ball. It's just very cool stuff.
I mean, Frankie Lovato created the Equisizer. This is like the equisizer on steroids. Something.
Yeah, it's, this is very, very cool.
It's incredible. And you can see the video. I think I'll post a link to the video of it on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page.
I tried to find a price, but I think it's one of those things, if you have to ask, you can't afford it because there is no price. So it comes with a 5-year extended warranty.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, wait a minute. Customers can also purchase optional extras. Get this. A calorie counter, a cover, because you'd want to cover it up, and a coin box. So you could put a coin box on the side, charge people.
I think you need more than coins to pay for that thing.
This is funny. Do you think this is the next version of the Walmart little rider horse? You see it in front of the Walmart?
Yeah, yeah, except for you'd have to swipe your credit card, which I might do.
You know, at horsey events, though, you know, at Rolex, you'd probably have people paying $5 a minute all day long to sit on this thing.
I know I would. $5 a minute? Okay, well, let's see. I want to do the actual Rolex.
We need
Rolex
to do the concession next year. You and I will make a fortune. Yeah. Now, the thing probably cost $150,000 to $200,000, but, you know.
We'll have to set up appointments for people to come back. Otherwise, the line will be too long. Ride the cross-country course right here, people. Come on. See how easy it is.
Oh, and you could put in the actual cross-country course.
Yes!
That's a cool idea. That's a cool idea.
One of these days, Glenn, we're going to make a million. I promise.
This is out of England, it looks like, the UK.
Yeah.
Yep. So it'd be in pounds anyway, and we couldn't convert it, so we would
swipe your card. Hey, you know, our good friend American Pharoah had his tail chewed off, right? And
yes.
And the horse that they're saying chewed it off was Mr. Z, and Mr. Z ran in the Derby, and he belonged to Zayat, but right before the Preakness, he was bought by, let's see, who ended up buying him? Well, Dwayne Lucas ended up training him, and he was bought. I can't find the rest of my story. I seem to have cut it out. Calumet. Thank you. Calumet. So Calumet bought him right before the Preakness and ran him, and I think he finished in fifth. So he hasn't actually won a race in any of his starts. Well, he finally won, and the story, if you've been there, makes it a little more interesting. He won the $500,000 Ohio Derby at Thistledown this past weekend. And the first thing that I thought is, when the hell did Thistledown get a race that was worth $500,000?
Yeah, that was one of those like Penn National type of tracks.
I have been to Thistledown. I bought a horse off the backside of Thistledown, and no horse that, I don't mean to be whatever, but it is not a place you would consider having $500,000 races. You know what I mean? Yeah. Thistledown is not one of the fancier tracks. But anyway, Mr. Z finally won a race, and there's a picture of him with Bob Baffert, with Joe Bravo. That's a cool name right there for a jockey. Joe Bravo.
That is a great name.
Is up in the irons. So congratulations, Mr. Z, and congratulations, Thistledown, for having a race. They might never get paid, but they had the $500,000.
Poor Thistledown. We're gonna, it's sort of like the same as Tampa Bay Downs. That's what we have down here. You have one out there in Phoenix too. What's it called?
Oh Lord have mercy. The one here at Turf Paradise.
Turf Paradise. That name alone.
Is that terrible?
That name alone is something that's retro out of like the 30s, the 1930s. Turf
this
Paradise.
Place has been around since the 30s. And it's fun to go to, but oh my God, I've looked in there and I'm like, okay, that, seriously, somebody needs to retire that horse. He's ran 150 times.
All right. I have a list for you. You want to do a list?
Good. Do it.
Now, I want to clarify this because one of our audience members is going to have one of these, and then they're going to be mad at us. So I want to clarify. It's the top 10 amusing phobias. And we've talked over the years about phobias every once in a while. And you know, these are not amusing if you actually have them. So I get that. But, and I can talk about this because I have an amusing phobia. I'm fearful of bridges. I just can't do bridges. So I don't like high bridges that are narrow. I just don't do high, narrow bridges. Now, I can fly in airplanes, helicopters. I'd like to skydive someday, roller coasters, whatever. That's all fine. I just don't do bridges. Jennifer doesn't do tunnels because she's got claustrophobia. So we can't do the Bay Bridge tunnel thing there in Maryland. We just can't do that one. Because we wouldn't know how to switch drivers in the middle. I have a bridge phobia, but there's people that have weirder phobias than mine. Now, do you have any phobias?
I was trying to Google it right now and see what it's called. I am absolutely freaked out, terrified. I cannot go in open water. I can go in a pool. I can swim. I'm a great swimmer, but I can't be in.
Oh,
like,
so cruising is not on your list of things that is enjoyable.
Go on a cruise, not because only because I'm sure the cruise is fun. But what if it sank? I would just die. Like, I would not even try to swim for it. I would just drown myself. I'd just go straight to the bottom. Living on a deserted island does not appeal to me. I'm not going on a boat. I don't do boats.
So your pool is.
People
fine.
Have
it's small yeah. enough. Okay.
There's yeah. a lake around here, and people, my friends just got a boat, and they're like, come out to the lake. And I'm like, you don't ruin your day by taking me. Really? Don't do it. So, yeah, I mean, seriously.
Deep sea
like,
fishing has never been on your
list. Oh, God.
List.
No. And I've tried to do everything, and it just never works.
Hey, I
have a question.
I get it.
I have
I
a question
it.
For Jamie.
Yes.
Now, does watching someone else swimming in the ocean on a TV set freak you out?
Yep. Can't yep. even watch a water
See,
movie.
It's the real deal.
Oh, you never watched that movie about that kid from India in the boat, did you?
I did. Life well, I read pie. The book. Oh, so okay. I read the book first, so I watched the movie because I knew it was going to happen. And I watched it once, and I can't watch it again.
There was that other movie about the boat out of Massachusetts in the big storm. I forget what that was
perfect
called.
The perfect storm.
Perfect storm.
And
yes.
I will tell you that right now, there's not much that keeps me away from George Clooney and Marky Mark. That movie, I walked out after 20 minutes.
Yeah, that wouldn't be your movie if you're afraid of open water.
I'm like in love with those guys. And I 20 minutes in, I'm like, I can't. Gotta go.
Well, here, okay, so we both have strange little phobias, and here are some people who have even stranger little phobias.
Oh, good.
a blutophobia. And that is, and I didn't know this one existed, and I do not want to meet one of these people. And if you are one of those people and you're listening, we're glad you're listening. It's the truly devastating fear of anything to do with bathing yourself. I don't know. That's a tough one. That's a tough phobia to have because really nobody wants to be around you. Yeah, that's a tough one. Huh. I don't know what else to say about that one. Now, I have known many people with the next one. It's ergophobia.
Okay.
And ergophobia sounds a lot like the one where you're afraid of being out in the open. You know, you don't like leaving the house. And that's a real one. And, you know, there's been a lot of people that have been devastated by that. Some very famous authors have had that one. No, this one is the fear of work. It stretches far beyond the fear of being alone. This is the fear of actually doing anything productive.
Seriously?
Yes. So, I have known people like that have feared work.
But now they have a diagnosis for it. Yes. So it becomes so, legitimate. There's probably going to be like medications. On
that's right.
For it.
And the next one I can't even say because it's about 100 letters long. It's hippopotamostrosthinga, and it goes on and on, phobia. And what it is the fear, and it's truly apparently psychologically damaging to people, it's the fear of long words. So there you go.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Hippopotamostrosquipedaliophobia.
Yes, is the fear of long words. So
that's the worst.
What's
title
that country
ever.
Over there? Is it over there in Netherlands or one of those that the words are like 80 miles long and they only have one vowel? So yeah, they wouldn't do so well with this phobia. Here's another one.
Oikophobia.
Oikophobia. Thank you very much. I'm glad you're helping me read these. Is the fear of household appliances. I know many horse women that have that fear, especially kitchen appliances.
I'm terrified of the crock pot.
Yes.
I just can't make a meal in it.
You're terrified of the microwave.
Yeah, that's true. You do have this.
It's just weird. It's just can't be good. It's just injecting cancer into your food. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. And, I know a lot of horse women that have fear of the washing machine, too. So,
yes. Unless we need to wash our saddle pads, then we suck it up.
The next one, you want to say the names? Because I'm never good at names.
Yeah, this is phobophobia.
And guess what this is?
Yeah.
It's the fear of having a phobia. You're actually afraid that you're going to have a phobia. That's kind of an irrational fear, I would say.
Xanthophobia.
What's the next one?
Xanthophobia.
Yeah, this one I don't get. It's the fear of the color yellow. Does that mean that? does that mean that every color has a phobia?
I don't know, but does that mean a lot of people can't watch SpongeBob SquarePants?
Yeah. Or eat bananas, for that matter, because, you're out on the banana front, too. Dude, God, if you ever see somebody walking through, now you'll know. You're at the grocery store, you see somebody walking through the produce department, and they take a wide berth around the bananas, you'll know.
I wonder if they just wear sunglasses that block out yellow, so they just don't see it.
And this, I come back to my original question. Are there people that have a fear of blue and orange and green? Uh-huh. Yeah,
I don't know. This next one is weird. It's called trichophobia, and I know people like this because I feel like non-animal people get around me, and they like this. It's an uncontrollable fear and disgust of loose and shed hairs.
Well, they don't want to be in our house.
Don't come in here.
Now with the beast, we have hairballs all the time.
So apparently they vomit at the sight of a hairbrush. They want to cry when standing close to a person that has a hair on their collar, or they lose sleep for days at the sight of a hair in food. That would suck because I'll be like, there's hair in my food. Oh, wait, that's mine.
Or the cats.
Or the dog. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, disaster.
You know, I have to empty. We have a tiny house. And when I vacuum, we have one of those canister vacuums that doesn't have the bag. And I actually have to empty that canister three times. And we vacuum 2 to 3 times a week. And it's from our damn cat. When you have a long-haired cat, you're screwed. If you have this disease, you're never going to have a long-haired pet of any kind.
No. And cats, man. We have a cat, and it fortunately has white hair, and it doesn't really do much, lays around. But the bed of white hair that will get, like, it loves to climb up. Frank loves to climb up into Chad's t-shirt drawer.
Oh, no.
And shelves.
Keep that baby closed.
Oh, Chad goes, damn cat. Like, he goes to pick up a t-shirt. And I think it's hilarious because he doesn't lay on my side. He lays over on Chad's. But to have fear of hair, you just can't even have a cat, period.
Turophobia. Turophobia, I think my dad had this, is the irrational fear of cheese. Now, I don't understand this one because I love cheese in any form. But the irrational, my dad did not like cheese. He didn't even like looking at cheese. So
really?
He had turophobia, I guess. He would not eat anything with cheese. He would actually order a pizza without cheese. It would just be sauce and toppings.
Yeah, I've tried that as a vegan, and it's just not as good. No,
it's bread with sauce. That's what it is. It's not as good.
May as well eat a ketchup sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically what
it
is.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and the top one?
The number one is nomophobia.
It's the fear of being out of reach or contact. This is a brand new one, by the way. A fear of being out of reach or contact with your mobile phone. I got to tell you, when I accidentally leave the house and drive off the property and to go to town or to go run errands without my mobile phone, without the phone, I got to tell you, it's tough. I'm thinking about it. I'm touching. I use a holster. I'm touching my holster about every 5 seconds going, oh, I lost my phone, and realizing I had left it at home. And I must do that 20 times.
You have nomophobia.
I do. How many times do you go away without your phone?
I ride without my phone.
Which is bad, by the way.
I can crawl back to the house. Okay, not like I'm going on a long trail ride, but I'd limp back.
Look at our friend down there in New Zealand, Ellie. When she fell off her horse, she could not move because she broke her back, and she was in an arena, and she had to use her mobile phone, or she wouldn't have been found for 3 hours.
Well, listen here. If you can figure out a way to put super thin tights, because it's 150 degrees here, and put a cell phone pocket in it, then great. But otherwise, I'm stuffing it down my pants.
They have arm things. They have leg things. They have all kinds of things to hold phones.
I don't want my phone when I ride. I don't.
Glenn
want it.
Just doesn't have a fear of being away from his cell phone. He has a fear of anyone being away from their cell phone.
What do you mean you don't have your phone? What do you mean you have to have your phone?
I hear.
What are you
going
to do if you're in the middle of the arena and nobody's home and you've fallen off and can't move?
I'll do what our ancestors did, which is just suck it up. Okay, suck it up
with that broken back.
When I was a kid and we wanted to make a call, we had to stand next to the wall and make the call. Dear God. And you know what? If somebody called us and you weren't home, you didn't get the call.
You know what? Do you see a payphone now and go, oh my God, there's still a payphone?
No, because there's no payphones.
At airports, they still have payphones. And then I wonder, how do you call somebody with a payphone anymore? And then there's a credit card swiper thing. And I guess that's how you call.
My father-in-law refuses to have a cell phone. And he wouldn't, when we were flying into Norman and there's all those storms and our plane got rerouted, he was stuck in the airport. And you know what he did to make phone calls? He asked random people if he could borrow their phone. And every single person was like, here you go. So you don't even need a phone. You can just borrow somebody's just standing around.
I'm going to buy you every kind of phone attachment holder to your body I can find and send it to you.
I won't do it.
Microwaves, phones. I mean, you won't carry a phone.
Phobia, Glenn. Whole new category.
That is a fear of other people not having a phone. You are seriously very sensitive to this.
I am, because I think it's dangerous. You not having your phone.
Did John Wayne get stressed out about not having his cell phone when he was
galloping around the
planes?
John Wayne had people. You don't have people. You have a child that can't dial yet. That's going to be crawling over to you going, Mommy, what's wrong?
Am I jinxing myself right now listening to this?
Anyway. Sorry, Jamie. It's just
I'm going
me.
Riding without my phone.
Bothers
I'm getting
me.
Out of here. Let's end the show. I'm done with you. You started out at but pre-show meeting irritating me, and it has continued throughout the day. So I'm done. Bye.
All right, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. Kim Baker's going to be here, and she's going to do a reading on one of our listeners' horses. So you can always look forward to that. And has some things we're talking, and this is unusual for Kim. We're talking rodeo-type stuff tomorrow on Kim's show. I don't know where that comes in, but we'll find out. And then maybe Jamie will be back on Friday. I don't know.
Maybe not.
I don't know if she's going to be back or not.
She might develop a fear of co-hosts. Fear of crazy co-hosts.
We have a great prize. Can I talk to you about what the prize is for Friday, though?
Glenophobia.
Hold on 1 second. I got to get the prize. Hold on.
See, it's just continuing to irritate me. How would you mention the prize and then not have it in front of you?
Oh, shut up. Okay, so the prize is world-class grooming. This is a great prize for Friday, and it's the reason I wanted to promote it ahead of time. This is for really bad ads on Friday, so get your ads into Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com. This is the book, World-Class Grooming for Horses by Kat Hill and Emma Ford. And we had them on and talked about this book, and it weighs about 25 pounds. It's going to cost me about $30 to ship it to you. But you want to win this book. It's a $39 book. Okay, so $39.95 is what this book costs. It is an excellent book. It is everything you ever need to know about grooming from two professional event groomers. So you definitely want to get this book, World Class Grooming for Horses by Kat Hill and Emma Ford. And it's so well designed. It's a spiral ring book, so you can actually take pages out if you want to when you're doing things like braiding and all of that. But it's get your ads in right now.
Do they have a section on trichophobia? For people who are afraid of hair shedding, anything like that?
Yes, it's the how to shed your horse out section. Yeah. It's funny. I just opened a book and it's on trimming manes. Yeah, that doesn't create a mess. I guess you'll never clip your horse if you have that, would you?
No, you pay somebody. You wouldn't have a horse.
No, you wouldn't have a horse. You couldn't have a horse. All right, that's it. That's all I've got.
Thank God. Spay, neuter, geld. Hit the button. God, I hate not being able to hit buttons.
If only I had one of the songs you hate.
I can just hang up now. Walk away.